What's going on, bro?
Not much. How are you doing today?
Solid day, bro. Shitty weather outside, but still in America, still having fun.
That's good. Are you feeling better?
Yeah, much better, man.
that's good.
Yeah, after some 7 days of amoxicillin and ibuprofen, dude, it'll do the trick and bring you back to life.
Oh, yeah. How'd you feel after taking the amoxicillin, though?
And Yeah, I had to take probiotics, dude, because it was absolutely running through my stomach, dude. That shit was...
Yep, that sounds about right, but it's a smart move to take probiotics with it.
Yeah, man, I just knew right away, like, as soon as I took the first one, I was, like, fucking on the toilet, and I was like, damn, I gotta do something about this, bro.
Yeah, how have you been enjoying being stateside?
I've literally just been eating and drinking for the past 25 days. It's been... It's been a roller coaster, dude. I'm gonna have to read your book when I get back home, dude, so I can lose all these vacation LBs, dude.
Well, I will be happy to help you out with that.
Yeah, I would love your help, dude. Speaking of which, you congrats on the book, bro.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. And it was definitely something that, like, once it was out, admittedly, it actually almost felt like back when I used to fight. Because, like, my first thought was, like, well, thank God that shit's over.
Yeah.
Like, even though it was a good feeling, but I was, like, it's such, like, a mentally taxing process. If I had, like, a really short read, because I knew it was just going to be an ebook, and then my plan is I'm going to take all the feedback I get, you know, from what people want, what they're looking for, and then build it out into, like, a deeper dive. Because this is very much like a concise, this is what you do. And I think it could be really helpful to those people who are struggling to, you know, lose weight and then keep it off. Because, you know, anybody can, you know, be good for 6 weeks, probably lose 15 pounds, and then they say, fuck it, and gain 20 back.
It's yeah, like
that's
sure.
Everybody's story was certainly mine.
Yeah, and, 100%.
So I think it could be really helpful for that. Because, like, honestly, like, this, you know, back when I was fighting a lot, you know, going through the process of, you know, making weight and, like, having, like, a couple months downtime and then fighting again, like, that, like, created, like, a really unhealthy relationship with food for me.
Sure.
I don't want to go so far as to say it was an eating disorder.
Yeah.
But, like, it definitely, like, encouraged, like, bouts of binging. And then, like, you know, and like I said, just creating this, like, really unhealthy relationship. And a lot of times, you know, when people are overweight and when they're struggling, what people don't get is that it's not a knowledge problem. Like, there's nobody who doesn't know you shouldn't eat pizza. They shouldn't eat or drink for 25 days. But, like, but you're doing it anyway. So, like, it's at that point, it's a behavioral issue.
Yeah.
And so what I tried to spend a meaningful part of my book doing was addressing the behavioral. Like, I'm still giving people the tactics in it, but trying to address, like, the mental aspect that goes into it. Because that often gets overlooked. I mean, people just are interested in, well, I want the new paleo, you know, the fucking paleo fix that will be super easy. And I want, you know, that's what everybody promises.
Yeah.
And then so I tried to kind of circumvent that, and I think I was pretty successful with it. Our feedback's been good so far, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Hell yeah, man. I saw you got number one on a couple of things on Amazon, a couple of categories for the ebook, which is pretty awesome, guys. So in case anyone's listening, go download Ryan White's ebook, dude. Go lose that weight.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it is called Getting Off the Roller Coaster, A Beginner's Guide to Fitness, Nutrition, and the Mindset for Lasting Weight Loss. I know it's a bit of a mouthful, but if you just write Getting Off the Roller Coaster, maybe you throw a Ryan White in there, it'll come up.
Hell yeah, man. Download that book, lose that weight. For me, it's personally the most difficult thing ever was going into a fucking supermarket here, bro. Like, living in Europe, you see how differently, like, food's regulated and, like, the things that they can offer you and, like, how really, like, I like to say organic the selections are in Europe. You know, like, you go in and there's not a lot of – there's no microwavable foods. Like, you don't find any of these, like, you know, quick packs for – veggies. It's usually mostly all fresh, you know, it's all brought from local farms and stuff like that. And I strolled into a fucking Stop and Shop, dude, And I'm telling you, bro, just the cereal section alone is bigger than the supermarkets I go to in Germany, dude. And holy shit, dude. I was walking up and down these aisles, and I'm like, the world is changing.
Dude, honestly, like, it's – I mean, the you know, I hate to say it, but, like, the deck is kind of stacked against people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the food industry is a really big one. It generates a lot of money and a lot of jobs. And it is – and it can be very predatory in its practices. You know, in the few times, you know, Washington has tried to get behind, you know, like kind of do something about it, you know, it's like, it has like these built-in defense mechanisms. Like, you know, Michelle Obama, like, was trying to be like a big champion for it. And, you know, and then you had, you know, people, you know, what usually like the big talking point that they'll hit is the opposition will then say, well, so now you're just trying to tell parents how to feed their kids. Now, who knows what their kid needs better, the parent or government? But the reality is, parents doesn't know what they're talking about. It's like, because their people get paid a lot of money, a ton of money to specifically manipulate you through sophisticated marketing campaigns into thinking something healthy when it isn't, or making something super desirable that really can barely qualify as food.
Yeah.
And so it's like, so it's tough, you know, but I think with a little bit of awareness, you know, people can kind of maybe shake that, but it is tough because we have like, and I think our response to COVID is evidence of this enough. People do not like being told what to do here.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very much, they're very strung up on their freedoms here, and they do not like to be put in a box.
Exactly, and I totally get it. But sometimes it's like, dude, this is what's fucking good for you.
You got to buckle down and just do it, yeah. That's why I honestly don't mind living in Europe, man, like cruising through those grocery stores. Like, you get a little bit of satisfaction in knowing that at the end of the day, you're not eating, like, microwavable buffalo chicken subs, and and you can't actually have to buckle down and cook yourself some healthy meals. So definitely going to have to get on that horse when I get back to Germany, man.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you'll probably need, like, a good cleansing period.
100%, dude. Unfortunately, we couldn't do the podcast last week because I had fucking strep. So we can talk about UFC 252. First fight, pretty impressive. Merab went in there. I think he did what we thought he was going to do. He was going to go in there. He was going to wrestle Dotson. He was going to mix it up. I think he did a good job in that fight.
Oh, he did. I mean, honestly, I thought Dotson could perhaps, you know, get one over on him. I figured, I was like, well, he's really fast. Merab had historically just kind of seemed to me to be kind of a one-trick pony, and I didn't really know if it would work against Dotson. But yeah, I thought he did great.
Yeah, he also looked sharp on his feet. Like, as much as it was more of like a wrestling affair, like a lot of takedowns and clinch work and stuff like that, like him just pretty much using his size to out-muscle Dotson and just beat him that way. But the exchanges on the feet, he also honestly didn't look that bad. I mean, he fights out of Cerro Longo gym, right? So he's got to have some sort of sharp hands training with Ray Longo, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, Dotson does seem like he's lost a little bit. Yeah. Like, he's a little slower. Didn't really seem to be pulling the trigger.
Yeah.
But, Merab just, you know, had everything for him, and Dotson had nothing in return.
Exactly. And then I think the craziest upset of the night, in my opinion, was Daniel Pineda actually finishing Herbert Burns on the ground, dude.
Yes, I completely agree with that.
Yeah, I thought Herbert was going to steamroll this guy. I never heard of Pineda. I mean, it's his third UFC stint, I think. He'd been in and out of UFC three times.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I had heard of him, but, like, you know, he was always kind of a journeyman.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you're not generally a world beater if you've been in and out a few times.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, and Herbert Burns is obviously, like, you know, got some, you know, really got the heat behind him. You know, he's one of the up-and-coming guys.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Pineda looked great.
Yeah, I mean, just out-muscled him on the ground, used his size, like, put him in that crucifix, you know, that modified crucifix, and just banged him out for the finish, dude. I thought that was really impressive. Have to concede on the next one. I let my pride get the best of me, dude. Junior Dos Santos definitely got his ass whooped in that fight. My bad.
Well, it's tough. It really is, because, like, Like I was saying when we were doing like the preview show for it, like I really like, I like Junior Dos Santos. He seems like a great human. He's an exciting fighter. And I just like don't want to see him get hurt anymore.
Yeah.
But he just, Kane just took something from him. Like ever since that trilogy, he just hasn't been the same guy. Those second and third fights, he got just absolutely mauled.
Even in that second fight, dude, I was really, I mean, if you saw the first fight against Kane and the times he actually, when he defended the belt also, he comes in with a good strategy. And then it felt like for that Kane rematch, he was just like hands down, like, and has this habit of like fighting with his back up against the fence, kind of like what Tyron Woodley's been doing lately. And these guys just like put themselves into corners and just let high level strikers just tee off on them. And I don't think that that's really the smartest strategy ever. So, Junior, I feel like he could have won that fight. He just has not made the right adjustments in his career so far. And he's getting older. So,
oh, yeah. I mean, like, because honestly, like, I think he's better than Rozenstruik. Yeah. But he just doesn't have the durability. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, the heavyweight, like, he has to be durable.
Exactly.
Because he also wasn't going to one-punch KO Rozenstruik.
No. He doesn't have that Ngannou power.
No.
I feel like a lot of juniors, he was just really fast for a heavyweight. I feel like he just whip punches in there and just catch guys. And when you have that much mass behind you, that much speed, like obviously guys are going to go down. But as he's getting older, he's slowing down and you don't see as much pop in his punches anymore.
Yeah, and he doesn't really seem to throw the volume he used to.
Yeah, the body shots too and mixing it up.
And I mean, honestly, and part of that's probably have to do with the durability issue.
Yeah.
Because if you can't really take it anymore, then you don't want to hang in the pocket and throw. Like,
exactly.
That's kind of like why it's like Alistair Overeem's a good example of this. Like, why he'll only ever throw one or two strikes at a time usually because he knows he fucking strong gust of wind's going to knock him out.
Yeah. Absolutely, dude. Glass jaw Overeem. Yeah, 100%. So concede on that one. Rozenstruik picked up the W. He looked good. The next fight, dude. What's your opinion on those calf kicks from Cheeto, dude? A lot of people were saying that maybe it was a fluke that O'Malley had, like, rolled his ankle. But watching all the breakdowns and, like, listening to Robin Black and all these other guys, like, really seems like those calf kicks are what set up that, I guess you can call it a slip, right? It wasn't really a knockdown. But, I mean, you got to credit a fighter if he lands a strike on you that debilitates you and you can finish him that way, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, the reality is, like, so I actually watched the fight a couple times just to kind of get a better picture of what happened. Because, like, the replay they were showing definitely made it just look like that, you know, he misstepped and then rolled his ankle.
Yeah.
But, like, the calf kicks are going to play a major part in that, too.
Yeah.
Because it's going to just hurt your stride, hurt your ability to even walk.
Yeah.
And so, even if they didn't directly cause the ankle being messed up, it definitely affected his ability to move.
Sure.
And that it's so like, so I think people trying to call that a fluke are like the people who say that when John Jones fought Thiago Santos, be like, yeah, well, Santos blew both of his knees on the fight. It's like, yeah, Jones was kicking him in the knee the entire time.
The entire time, yeah.
Exactly. Three, like they made strike the blue kick what he was doing. Chito Vera was throwing a ton of calf kicks.
And he was checking a lot of O'Malley's kicks too, which obviously plays a big part into how, like, the strength in your leg after. Like, we all know what it's like when you throw a hard leg kick and someone checks the shit out of you, dude. That does not feel good, bro.
Oh, yeah. Oh, exactly. And, like, and it sounds like this is a consistent issue with O'Malley, you know, and so, I mean, I think he's probably going to need to retool a lot of what he does.
Yeah.
So this doesn't happen anymore.
Sure.
But, like, I don't know if he has the personality type to be willing to do that, though. I mean, he's already, like, kind of just saying that he's one of the best to ever do it, blah, 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 blah. Honestly, it's kind of boring.
Yeah.
Like, really? Like his shtick, I think, would be better if he just had to be, like, a stoner hippie weirdo.
Yeah.
But him trying to be Conor McGregor while looking like Post Malone and just smoking meat all the time is lame.
Lame as fuck. And I also think that from watching those elbows that Cheeto was landing on the ground, dude, I have to, on the side of caution, really think that O'Malley was out, dude.
Yeah, I mean, and if if he wasn't completely, he was well on his way. Like, that was a good stoppage by Herb.
Yeah.
Because especially, too, like, was it Herb Dean who ref that?
It was Herb.
Yeah. And, I thought O'Malley fought valiantly after being hurt. You know, like, he still tried to press forward, you know. And so kudos to him there. But he clearly didn't have anything at that point. And so, like, I know some people bitch that they thought the stoppage was early, but I 100% agree with you. Those elbows are really hurting him. And you also have to look at the situation. Like, it just wasn't going to get better for him.
No, and Cheeto is way better on the ground than O'Malley is. O'Malley is like an over-glorified purple belt, blue belt, whatever the fuck he is. Cheeto, I know he trains with these guys out of Alliance in Ecuador and Guayaquil, some other places. And these guys, I'm telling you, bro, are some of the most impressive people I've seen in jiu-jitsu, like, with my eyes, you know, besides obviously world champions, which they have produced. And I know Roberto Jimenez, who's a really talented black belt, trains out of there. Johnny Tama trains with these guys. And there's just no way in my mind that I thought that Cheeto was going to lose that battle on the ground. And as soon as he slipped, to me, it wasn't – I was surprised that he managed to really put a beating on him with the strikes. But I thought even if the strikes weren't going to put him away, he had 2.5 minutes to work him on the ground till the end of the round. And I just didn't see O'Malley really recovering from that either. So regardless, I think, yeah, O'Malley's really talented. He's got a really talented stand-up game. I think Cheeto was very underlooked. I bet my money on Cheeto. I knew he was going to go out there and do what he does. But he's got a better track record. He's fought tougher guys. O'Malley's just kind of on this, like, mild come-up, and they threw him like a top 15 guy. And I think Cheeto did a good job. And hats off to Cheeto, man. All the credit to him. The leg kicks definitely put O'Malley away. Like, definitely.
Absolutely. That's why I do kind of feel bad for Vera, because I think a lot of people are just, you know, they've kind of fully marked out for O'Malley, and they're kind of dismissing the Vera's win because they're like, well, it's a fluke, and well, he just got hurt, and blah, 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 blah. But it's like, dude, it's like, you know, but shut up. Vera did great. He put him away with technique, skill, and precision. And he deserves all the credit of the world for that.
Fuck yeah, dude. It's like you mentioned before, like, these aren't fluke wins. Like the Chris Weidman Silva fight, they drill that leg kick. They drill those checks to literally break people's legs, bro.
Yep. Ray Longo is a JKD guy, you know, Jeet Kune Do, and that's what's called a destruction in that.
Yeah.
It's cheesy, but that's what it is. Yeah, they were specifically drilling that. They knew what Silva would do, and then, yeah, fucked them up.
Exactly. So you can't take away the win from Weidman for working on those techniques, and you can't take away the win from Vera for checking those leg kicks and throwing those calf kicks. On to the main event, dude. I was actually super impressed with Stipe. I thought Cormier did really well in the first round. He had his moments, but hats off to Stipe for really just changing up the game plan, trying to clinch a little more, use his height. I think you knew that if he was going to go in there and fight the way he fought in the first fight, obviously he was going to get knocked out. And if he was going to go there and fight the way he fought in the second fight, which he was ultimately losing up until that fourth round, that he was probably going to lose a decision or get knocked out again. So change up the game plan. He's got a really smart team, very underrated team. He doesn't come out of a big gym, right? So, I mean, Screech holds pads for him. So, overall, I thought Stipe did a good job, dude. Well-deserved victory.
You know, it was like, I was pulling for Cormier. I thought, especially with this being his last fight, this was like an important one for his legacy.
Because
even though I think he's one of the best heavyweights ever, it now kind of looks like, and I know this isn't true, but that he was kind of like the placeholder champion for the real guy.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, you know, he was a good 205 pound champion until John Jones came back.
Sure.
You know, and then he ended up dropping the series to Stipe. And so just what really frustrated me about the fight was that he hit that single in the first round, very little resistance, and then never even pretended to go for a takedown after that.
Yeah.
You know, he then just tried to box. He just doesn't have that many weapons. You know,
Javier Mendez even said that he really hopes that DC stays retired, because I think that they had come to like a consensus that he had actually been like losing a step in the gym. Mm-hmm. I think like Javier was openly talking about it in an interview with Bloody Elbow or something, saying that like in fact DC had been losing a couple steps, and you could see that obviously. I mean, the guy's what, 42 years old, bro? Like he's yeah.
When especially with the amount of wear and tear that he's probably put on his body from years of wrestling, years of doing this. And now also, too, he is doing the other stuff. He's one of, like, the most common commentators the UFC has. I know he coaches wrestling. He does all sorts of stuff. And it's really difficult to do both that and be a championship-level fighter.
Exactly.
You know, that's like, it's similar to the conversation everybody always has about McGregor and Tyron Woodley.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, can you both be a fighter and be something else? Now, granted, Stipe also is a full-time firefighter. And he seems to be doing it just fine. But
yeah.
But there are people where it's really tough.
Yeah, I can understand. I mean, it's a lot of time on the road. It's a lot of PR. It's a lot of just a lot of everything, right? And to mix in your coaching with your training and to really be like it's like – perfect. There's a really good examples of a lot of these local fighters here that, like, if they really just had the money and the resources to just buckle down and train all the time, I think you would see like a lot of different performances out of these guys.
Yep.
And obviously, if you're juggling fucking 40 hours a week, plus maybe you got a kid and you got a girlfriend and you got a sick parent or something, and then you're in the gym training and you're trying to make it to the next level, it can be a bit difficult for these guys to really show all their skill sets and to perform to 100% of their ability. So I can understand how that kind of wore on DC for a bit, man. That guy's announcing now that Rogan's out, they need a big name to go to Fight Island and go to all these other places and commentate. And DC's probably one of the more preferable guys, right? The dude's double champ, Olympian. Oh. The guy sees everything. So,
and he's also just fucking good at it.
Yeah, he's great at it.
You know, he's one of the better guys they have in the commentator booth. And so I hope he stays retired too. This was really the first time, in my opinion, that he looked old.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and that's why I just wish he kept wrestling.
Yeah.
Because it's like, that I feel like you can get away with being the slower fighter, while grappling.
Yeah.
It's really difficult to strike with somebody who's taller than you, but you're also slower than the tall person.
100%, dude. 100%.
And I say this as a short, slow guy. It's very difficult.
For sure, dude. I mean, the eye poke obviously was unfortunate, but hats off to DC. Like, wasn't an excuse. You went in there.
Yeah. And I hate to say it, but, you know, it's easy for me to fucking talk shit from my couch.
Yeah.
But, like, that's all the more reason why he needed to wrestle. It's like, you know, you can grapple blindfolded. I don't want to.
Sure,
dude. But some daredevil, I'm not throwing hands. Well,
that
would be a mistake.
Yeah. Obviously, it felt like he could have switched up the strategy a little bit. I also find it a lot more difficult to grapple with guys that have this, like, lower center of gravity. So when he's fighting a tall guy like Stipe, I feel like he could have really controlled the action on the ground. And I was really surprised that Stipe was able to really out-muscle him in the clinch, you know, because that's typically where DC shines, right? It's where he beat him in the first fight.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I do think there is an element that the commentators even mentioned where it seemed like Cormier was trying to fight his instincts a lot.
Yeah.
You know, after he was, like, kind of scolded for getting the eye poke on Stipe, he was trying to avoid, like, reaching as much like he was, because he'd always, like, reach with his hands, like, his fingers extended. And so, but yeah, it just, he just looked like an old guy now.
For sure, like, man.
And so that was a bummer.
Yeah, it was a good card. Last weekend's card was also pretty solid. Shout out to Mike Rodriguez. Got the co-main event slot, dude. That was a sick fucking elbow in the clinch, dude. Big shout out to Mike Rodriguez.
Oh, man, that was the best I've ever seen Mike look. I was so happy with it. You know, I mean, because he is one of the kindest, nicest human beings I've ever met.
Yeah.
You know, like, I used to train with him a lot when I was regularly going to LeBron MMA.
Yeah.
And he was always, like, one of my favorite guys to have seen in the gym.
100%, dude. And you know that this guy's training with a bunch of killers, and we all know that he knew that his back was up against the wall, I think, coming off a loss. So he needed to go in there and and impress everybody in the UFC, and holy shit, dude, did he do that. And I think if there's one thing to be known is that if you're fighting these New England guys, bro, if you're in that clinch, dude, you're going to suffer.
I mean, absolutely. And all the guys coming out of, like, that camp, like, New England MMA.
Yeah.
They've done such a good job at sort of systematizing the training process. They all have, like, great routines. They work incredibly hard. They have amazing coaches.
Yeah.
Joe Lauzon, Jake Nannini, Mike Perry doing strength and conditioning.
Yeah.
Like, they just, they really have it dialed in. And I was, so happy to see Mike get that W. Because it was really needed. And not only did he get it, but he looked fucking impressive, too.
Yeah, he looked really fucking good, man. 2 minutes in, good finish. How'd you feel about the Frankie Pedro Munhoz fight? I know that it's been back and forth on the MMA media outlets on who actually won that fight, but I thought Frankie did a good job.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Dana. Like, I personally was personally leaning a bit towards Munhoz, but that said, it was close enough where I didn't think it was robbery either. It's just sort of a what you value. If you value damage, then yeah, Munhoz won. If you value volume and output, then Frankie won. That's just how it is. I mean, but crap, Frankie didn't look like he would crack an egg with those punches. he'll hit you a lot, but they just don't have anything on him.
Because he
the punch mostly just with his arms, like not really rotating or sitting on any of them.
Yeah.
He's just interested in getting in, blah, 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 landing a few and then getting out.
Which is weird because, I mean, he's had like his fair share of knockouts, man. I mean, the Gray Maynard knockout, I know that's years ago, but some pop in his punches, and that Chad Mendes knockout stands out the most, man. Like, and just to see the loss of that pop, but he's also getting old, dude. This guy's fought in, what, 3 divisions now? He's 155.
Oh, absolutely.
Pound champ.
I think for somebody who is, I believe, 37 years old.
Yeah.
And, it's like, he looked incredible. I literally just criticized his technique there.
Yeah.
I thought he looked amazing. His head movement was great. His footwork was great. His cardio did seem to wear a little bit in the later rounds. I wasn't sure if that was more because of damage or him actually getting tired.
Maybe cutting weight. Maybe it's the first time he's really cut that weight in his career. He's just not used to it.
Yeah, because, I mean, the truth is, he should have been here his whole career.
Yeah, and he would have done really well at 35 in his whole career.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, honestly, like, that's a throw any shade at Dominic Cruz, but I don't know if Dominic Cruz would have been able to be a thing if Frankie Edgar decided to be able to 35.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, both the guys have really good movement. Would have been an interesting fight, like, 5 years ago, but can't live life on what-ifs, I guess.
Exactly. I mean, honestly, I would still be down to see that fight.
100%.
I think it would be exciting, and maybe that would be a good one for Frankie.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he, I know Dana said that he's probably 1 or 2 fights away from a title shot.
Yeah.
And everybody seems to have dance partners right now, really except Cruz, and so maybe that would be the fight to make.
For sure. I would be pumped to see that fight. How do you feel about Aljamain Sterling getting the number 1 contender shot against Petr Yan?
Oh, I think it's deserved.
100%. I think he's riding, what, like a 6-fight win streak right now. I think he's got half of them are finishes, some submissions in there. That last fight I think he had against Sanhagen was really impressive. So.
He looked incredible. I think he'll be good. They'll be a really interesting one. As Sterling, I think, is very talented, but he seems to kind of be inconsistent.
Yeah.
Like there are times where I feel like he looks like the very best in the world. And then other times where I'm like, so did he just not train for this or something? But like,
yeah.
But yeah, I think that'll be a really good fight.
For sure. And then we got a fight card coming up this weekend. We have the rematch with Magomed Ankalaev versus Ian Kutalaba. I don't think. Do you remember the first fight?
Unfortunately, no, I don't.
So in the first fight,
I didn't even know there were fights this weekend. I'm gonna be honest.
Yeah, maybe you. I'll just. I'll toss the matchups in there, and there's some big names in there that you probably recognize. So,
cool.
The first fight, dude, was that fight where I think it was Eve Levine that was reffing the fight, and Ian got hit with like a head kick that grazed him, and he was pretending to wobble. Have you seen these highlights? He was pretending to wobble.
I do remember that fight.
Yeah, and then Magomed came in like whiffing punches, and he wasn't even really connecting. Like Kudalaba was kind of just like brushing him off his shoulders, and Levine went in and stopped the fight, and Ian was like clearly kind of playing cat and mouse.
Yeah, I do remember that fight.
Yeah, he was trying to rope-a-dope him. I'm excited to see how it goes because Magomed's tough as shit, and Ian's obviously just a psychopath. I think I don't know if you've ever seen the first fight, dude. They had to actually break up the fight before the fight had even started.
Damn.
So he got into his face as soon as Buffer was announcing his name and did the whole cutthroat thing, and they had to push him away and put them back in his corner so the fight could start. So excited to see how the rematch goes. Yeah. And then we got Robbie Lawler and Neil Magny fighting this weekend. In the co-main.
That should be a fun fight.
Yeah, that's a hard one for me. That's a toss-up for me.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see Lawler win, but he just hasn't really seemed to be able to put it together recently. And but I think he should be able to win. I would love to see it.
Yeah, I mean, he's on a 3-fight skid. I mean, if MMA math is put into place, he's lost to Dos Anjos, who's also beat Magny. And I think Covington has also fought and beat Magny, if I don't stand corrected. We can double check here. Has not fought Magny, but he's also beat Dos Anjos. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I think if Robbie can be like the old Robbie and try to bully him a little bit and just be in his face and land big punches, because we've seen that Magny can get knocked out, like with the Ponzinibbio fight.
Oh yeah, and I think if Magny can't turn into a grappling match, then he loses.
Yeah.
But Lawler is also like such a weirdo where he'll just like occasionally take rounds off and decide not to do anything.
Yeah.
Like the big example of that for me was the Cowboy Cerrone fight, where round two he literally threw one strike.
Yeah. I mean, he's also like a guy that's taken a lot of damage throughout his championship run. You know, I mean, the fight with Johnny Hendricks wasn't an easy fight. The Rory fight, we all know the Rory fight, dude, was absolutely insane. The second one.
Oh, 100%. I mean,
and the Condit fight also.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he has been a world-class fighter since, I want to say, 2003.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's been in this for almost, if not 20 years. Like, he started fighting right when he could.
He started fighting on my birthday in 2001, April 7th, dude. So.
Oh, wow. Hell yeah. So he's been doing this for just about 20 years.
Yeah.
And so, like, that is a long time to be taking shots from the best in the world.
For sure. Because he's also 38, dude.
Exactly. I mean, he's been fighting everybody too. And so I would love to see him maybe get the win and then hang it up.
Yeah.
You know, I hate when guys call for retirement of other people, because, like, obviously the fighter knows a hell of a lot more than me. They can, like, just talk ass fast.
Yeah. Happens.
But, like, yeah. Well, I feel like it's our right as fans to talk shit. That's sort of, like, that's what being a fan is.
At least we're kind of, we're mildly educated fans.
Yeah. But it does get to a point where it's like, why are you doing this? I'm sure at this point he doesn't really need the money, you know, because I'm sure he has been compensated well, you know, for, you know, by virtue of being, you know, he was champion for a bit. He's had a bunch of title fights. You know, he's been an upper echelon fighter for, you know, in the UFC for at least like the past 5 or 6 years. And so, like, it'll be interesting to see what he chooses to do. But I do think, like, it does get to a point where you have to ask yourself why you're still doing
it. 100%, dude. I mean, let's talk about this guy. Used to fight. He fought 13 years in Miletich Fighting Systems, dude. Like, that camp, 2000 to 2013, dude. Those guys were like the top echelon of MMA at that point. They were just bringing in high class wrestlers into the old UFC and just like putting out talent left and right. So this guy's really, dude, he's been around the block for a long fucking time, dude. And Magny, I mean, he's riding a 2-fight win streak. He just fought Anthony Rocco Martin, and he did a really good job, dude. And Rocco Martin's no joke either, and I think that it'll be a tough fight for Lawler, but if he can come out and be the old Lawler, like go for broke and really just go in there to try to KO him, he'll win the fight. But if he doesn't and it goes to like a point match, like they're really just in there trying to outpoint each other, I think Neil Magny just has more overall. He's got too much length, you know. He's just the more well-rounded fighter at this point.
Yeah,
fresher fighter.
I absolutely, and I mean, well, do you want to talk about like wear and tear? Both in competition, but like out of it too, is almost more important.
Yeah.
And the Miletic camp was always notorious for their Monday, Wednesday sparring, where just be, you know, where just be like 12 rounds, hard as you fucking can.
Yeah, dude, the old way of training.
Exactly, and you're going in, you know, and you were going with everybody. So he was throwing hands with Tim Sylvia, Matt Hughes, Jens Pulver, like just a real old, you know, who's who, and even like the lesser known guys like Rory Markham and stuff, who still like went on to the UFC, you know, and like, and so he's, the amount of punishment he's probably taken, you know, is probably really big. And I know he had even said a few years back that was why he doesn't really spar anymore. I don't know if he still holds true to that, but I know he was one of the first guys to stop sparring in general.
Yeah, I think him, Cerrone kind of set the trend. I mean, Cerrone's career obviously went in like I think they both went in similar paths. It really benefited them not taking as much damage.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's, you know, sparring is kind of a hot button issue in the industry where there's always a debate about how hard you should go, how often you should do it. Like, I mean, like, I personally think, like, when you first start, you should have, like, at least some experience with hard sparring just so you both – A, learn that you're not made of glass, you can take a shot and you're not going to crumble, and B, that you learn how to actually hit people.
Sure.
And it's like, but then, you know, after you get past that like initial phase, I don't know how necessary it is. I mean, like, I spar maybe once a week now. If I were to look enough to fight, I might pick that up a little bit, probably not a whole lot. You know, just because, like, it's, you know, you gotta save your brain.
100%, dude. I mean, he's training out of Sanford MMA now, which is the same camp that, like, guys like Herbert, Gilbert Burns, Kamaru Usman, Michael Johnson, these guys all fight out of that camp. And from the videos that I see, I mean, it's Henry Hoofsham, right? The guy's a striker. I wouldn't be surprised if he actually is sparring and sparring quite hard, so.
Yeah. When did he leave ATT?
Yeah, he left ATT 2017, and now he's training over at Sanford MMA, so.
Cool.
Yeah, man. And main event, dude, we got Anthony Smith. He's coming off that brutal loss against Glover Teixeira, fighting against Alexander Rakic, who just lost a split decision to Volkan Oezdemir. I think it's a good fight for 205. I think it's kind of like a top eight contender kind of fight. Because, I mean, before Smith lost to Glover, he had just beat Alexander Gustafsson. And Rakic was on a 4-5 win streak with that massive head kick over Jimmy Manoa before he lost to Volkan Oezdemir. So I think it'll be an interesting fight. I don't really know much about Rakic. Like, I watched the Ledette fight live because I was in Germany and he was really impressive. I think that was a really good fight. The Jimmy Manoa fight was crazy to see, but Jimmy Manoa was obviously on the tail end of his career and had retired promptly after the fight, so. It's really confusing. I think for me, it's a tough one to say. I would just side on with the veteran and just pick Anthony Smith here.
Me too. But I'm also with you in that I don't really know a whole lot about his opponent.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I mean, and Anthony Smith is no joke. I thought he's fully capable of being Glover Teixeira. Glover just, through experience, fought a much smarter fight
and beat the absolute shit out of him, dude.
He did, but it's like that was after getting to beat the shit, having the shit beaten out of him in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
But he let Smith blow his wad, and then start applying pressure as Smith got tired, and then it led to one of the worst beatings we've seen in a very long time.
I wouldn't be surprised if that fight gets beat down of the year.
Oh yeah, I mean, It'll be interesting to see though if that fight ended up like, I don't know, changing something in Smith.
Yeah.
Changing the way he fights. You know, I mean, hopefully it didn't physically take anything away from him. But like, but yeah, that fight was
brutal to watch, dude. I think that Smith isn't a dumb fighter. I think he's really talented. We've seen that he's got a really good ground game, above average for the light heavyweight division. He's obviously got power in his kicks and his punches and his elbows and his knees. He's a very well-rounded fighter. Rakic, I mean, I don't think he's really fought anyone of high caliber. And when he did fight someone of high caliber, he lost a split decision. So I'm going to side with Anthony Smith, and just solely based on the fact that he's has my favorite walk-in in the UFC, dude. Return of the Mac, dude.
I respect it. I
fucking love this guy. How do you feel about John Jones officially vacating the belt, moving up to heavyweight?
I know everybody's kind of like, it's about time, yeah. But I would have loved, but I did want to see him rematch Reyes.
Yeah.
You know, because I thought that fight was super close to the point that he arguably probably should have lost.
Yeah.
And so I would have liked to see that rematch. But that said, it is nice to have 205 open again.
Yeah. Who is it? Anthony Rumble Johnson is tossing his name in the loop now. He's back in the USADA testing, and I think he's ready to also come back.
That would be really cool. That would be another person who I would like to see fight John Jones.
Yeah.
But it'd be great to have him back.
100%. I think Jones will be like polarizing at heavyweight, man. Like to see him actually maybe like keep that muscle that he puts on in the off season, you know, like when he's not training to fight, like when he's really bulking up. I'd like to see him kind of hold that weight. I think him and Stipe is a very interesting matchup. I mean, we've seen Jones get hit, not really rocked ever in his career. So it'll be nice to kind of see when he's fighting like real, real big boys, like who knows, man, like Derek Lewis, Francis Ngannou, Stipe, like guys that have power in comparison to his length and speed, you know. So it'll be very interesting to see how he translates his skill set from 205 to heavyweight.
Oh, I agree 100%.
Have you seen a lot of the Bellator UFC beef lately?
No, I haven't. What's going on with that?
Scott Coker came out saying that he thinks that he was first off saying that the 205 division in Bellator is better than the 205 division in the UFC.
Oh, I did see Dana's rebuttal to that. He was like, well, they're mostly our guys who we fired, so yeah. Cool.
Yeah. But Vadim Nemkov, dude, this guy that just beat Ryan Bader, I think he's pretty tough, would give a lot of guys. With John Jones out of the division, I can see how a guy like that would give a lot of people in the UFC a run for their money.
Oh, wait, 100%. I mean, the truth is 205 is probably the weakest division in the UFC, at least amongst the men. And, I don't think it was entirely outlandish, but when you have Chael Sonnen as one of your top 10 205ers, when he's been retired for a year and a half, I think that a top 10 at 205, period, is absurd.
Yeah.
and I think, you know, Bellator is often dismissed as just being the clear number two in branding-wise. They certainly are.
Yeah.
But their top guys are UFC-caliber fighters. Like,
for sure.
They would fit in that echelon of the UFC.
So, you know, Patricio Freire, I think he's the featherweight and the lightweight champion for Bellator. Him and Volkanovski were going back and forth, talking some shit. Patricio's a guy that I actually think, like, if he fights at featherweight, dude, he could give all those guys a run for their fucking money.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I would love to see it happen, but as long as with Bellator it won't, I mean, the UFC famously refuses to do any sort of co-promotion.
Cross-promotion, you know,
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, and why the hell would they? It's like, are they going to get like the five people who are pure Bellator fans but not UFC fans? Probably not.
Yeah,
I know there are very few people who are like that, but like, it's just like, yeah, it does nothing for the UFC and it could potentially make them look worse.
100%. And I think it's really cool what Bellator did with Ryzen. I think the New Year's event last year where they had like champ versus champ.
Oh, that was really fun. And But yeah, I mean, it's just the UFC doesn't need to play ball like that. Like they used to. Like they sent Chuck Liddell to Pride, you know, where he fought Rampage and Overeem. And then I guess you could even say when they like putting together McGregor Mayweather fight.
Yeah, 100%.
I think that was different. I think that was different though because it wasn't their sport.
Yeah.
And but like, yeah, I just can't picture them being down for that because what do they have to gain?
Yeah, 100%. I guess last topic of the day. How do you feel about Costa versus Adesanya, all that beef going on?
I think either way the UFC wins because Sal Bender's a great champion, and I think Costa would be a really good champion.
Yeah.
I'm still betting on Izzy just because he is, as he showed at the old Romero fight, he is not afraid to have a boring fight.
Yeah.
And I think Costa will keep – like plodding forward and Style Bender will fence him if he has to.
Yeah.
You know, just like throwing high kicks, keeps and keep him, you know, and kind of keep him away.
Yeah.
But he is so fucking big.
Yeah, dude, he's massive.
I mean, like, yeah, so I was in California, you know, because Manny Bermudez fought the same night that Costa and Romero fought.
Yeah.
So seeing Costa in the green room afterwards, like he was in a wheelchair, that fight was an absolute war. But he still came up to like my chin. Like he is a huge guy.
Even that's that rice down. And beans diet, bro.
and so like, I mean, who knows? He hits really hard. I could picture him like, you know, maybe putting the Style Bender away or at least like winning a decision through aggression.
Yeah.
Because he will be the one coming forward. I don't know if Style Bender can knock him out. And yeah. And so I think it's a tough fight to call. I would gun to my head and put it on Style Bender by virtue of being a smarter fighter.
Sure. I mean, look at the size of Paulo Costa's fucking head, dude. Just look at the size of him anyways, dude. I know a lot of people don't think, like when you say, oh, that dude's got a big head, that it doesn't mean anything. But, bro, like the size of your neck and the size of your head pretty much dictates like how hard you can take a punch sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And Izzy's a precision fighter, and he's one of those guys that he's not like – so I'd like to say that McGregor does have power, but I'd say he's more of like a speed and technique kind of guy when it comes to putting people away. And I feel like Izzy is around the same category where he doesn't have the frame to throw like really powerful punches. He just throws really precise punches and knows where to hit you and put you out. Whereas Costa,
yeah, he'll throw right when he needs to. Exactly. Yeah.
No worries. And Costa's just got he's built to throw power. Like he's got very big hips, like very big legs. He's got very big shoulders. You know, like he's a dude that's gonna when he touches you, it's gonna fucking hurt you.
Oh yeah, I mean, I definitely think that Israel Adesanya is the better striker, probably by a pretty wide margin. But I don't know if he has the horsepower that that Costa does.
Like actual horsepower, because Costa is actually half horse, dude. He's also from my mom's city, dude. He's from Belo Horizonte, Brazil. So I got to side with Costa on this one, bro. For the sheer fact that I can't bet against my guy here. I've never been to New Zealand. So I can't even say that, you know, out the window for me on you, Izzy. I'm going to go Acosta, dude. I really appreciate the fact that he's like one of the very few Brazilian champions that actually learns how to speak English, trying at least.
Yeah, I think Anderson Silva still uses a translator.
Yeah, I know that dude, Saul Ribeiro, is that his name?
Yeah. Saul Almeida.
Saul Almeida, yeah. It's Saul Almeida, yeah. He's a local guy, dude, and he fucking translates for Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I got to side with Costa on this one. I think that he's going to really just pressure. He's just going to be in Izzy's face, and it's going to be a tough fight because we've never seen people really with the same power and skill that Costa has. I mean, you could maybe highlight the Brunson fight where Brunson in that point in time was fighting, like, a little not as smart as he could and just really in his face. And getting caught, but got a side with Costa on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that. Because while I'm favoring Style Bender a little, the reality is it's 50-50. I could 100% picture Costa winning. I think it'll be a fun fight in that I just genuinely don't know what will happen.
Yeah.
But that's probably the one I'm looking forward to the most out of all the fights coming up.
Hell yeah. Well, thanks for tuning in, guys. Feel free to download Ryan White's new book, dude.
It's number one right now on Amazon in a bunch of categories. If you're trying to lose that weight, please download the book. Tune in next week, guys. Have fun watching the fights this week. Cheers.